Okay, Bob, welcome. This is our third session. It is September the 7th, 2010 in Auckland, New Zealand. Presumably it's September the 6th, 2010 in Hawaii, in Maui, where you are. And great to have you here, and let's get going.
Yeah, great to be forward. I don't want to say great to be back, so I'll say great to be forward. And so this is a third session recorded on September 6, 2010, my perspective. Copyright 2010, New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting at 10:47 p.m. Hawaii time in my context. I'm really glad that you brought in Plasmary Dialogues, which is an article written by Wilfred Watson, the co-author of Cliché to Archetype, from Cliché to Archetype, 1970. And it's his article about the effort to finally put the book together in the late 60s. They meet in 1968 through 69, and it's a key point in the relationship between Watson and McLuhan. And did you have something you want to say that I'm leaving out before I go into some particular content in this article?
No, I'll just give some citation details if somebody wants to find it. It's Marshall McLuhan and Multiconsciousness, The Place Marie Dialogues, and it's authored by Wilfred Watson. It appears in Boundary 2, Volume 3, Number 1, and it's a Canadian issue in autumn 1974, and extends from pages 197 to 212. So there we go. There's a 22 right at the end. So other people can find it. I think it should be available on the web.
Right. Now, he says, he gives an example of the style of dialogue they get into, which is a bit of a problem for Wilfred. He says, the polarization of these exchanges can hardly be missed, namely the cliché as active consciousness versus the cliché as fossilized psychic energy. And this is on page 202 of the article. And he says, this dramatic layout he calls stichomythia, sticho or stichomythia, the dramatic term, theatrical term for showing one person speaks, next person responds, next person, first person comes back. So this alternating dialogue, which happens a lot in Finnegan's Wake. He says, true, the stichomythia I represented oversimplifies. The result of daily sessions of batting backwards and forwards, ideas, hypotheses, and wild guesses about the nature of cliché was a blinding confusion of insights, each demanding to be reviewed one by one. Still, I wasn't in much doubt as to what I was after. I wanted to establish a cliché as a unit of awareness and to use it for analysis of the extensions of man, which, as I have just said, I saw as making up a large part of human consciousness, perhaps the only part of consciousness accessible to investigation. Okay. Now, he says, in this stichomythia he offers, he has himself saying the cliché is an act of consciousness, an act of awareness. McLuhan, he has, saying, but the cliché is a storage system, a storage battery. Then Wilfred says the cliché is probe. Then McLuhan responds, every time we employ cliché, we store up energy. Wilfred says the successful cliché is a successful probe. McLuhan responds, yes, the cliché is verbal coal, C-O-A-L, verbal oil, fossil fuel. Wilfred says, the failed cliché is a failed probe. McLuhan says, a great comic artist like James Joyce is a master at releasing the fossil energy of the cliché. Wilfred says, and if the cliché is an act of consciousness, then the technologies are modes of awareness. McLuhan for James Joyce, the clichés of language make up a vast hydroelectric system. Wilfred responds, the cliché is a unit of consciousness. McLuhan responds, Joyce's Finnegan's Wake is a guide to technology. Wilfred says the cliché is a unit of technology. So he had said the cliché is a unit of consciousness. McLuhan mentions Finnegan's Wake. Then Wilfred says the cliché is a unit of technology. What I find is that McLuhan's words are supporting what Wilfred's saying. And Wilfred does not have the range of perspective that includes McLuhan's words, and so he thinks that McLuhan's words are contradicting what he's saying. Did you notice that?
Yeah, in a certain sense, they just talk past each other, and I think that's what they, one of the great sources of energy is. You know, it's and I guess it. They're coming at it from, well, the same essential issue, just from different angles.
Okay. So Wilfred talks later about the envelope of technology swallowing up previous technologies, or technological clichés, the new ones swallowing up the older ones. And he talks about language not being entropic and falling apart like a machine. It's negentropic, never runs out of energy. It's the only medium that stays vital while all the other passing technologies or non-linguistic media fall away eventually. I would say that he's noticing the tactile quality of language. It's very important to know that McLuhan called language, and that's not just verbal, it's the act of interspeech between people when they're in each other's presence. That's tactile. So it includes body gesture, smell, movement, proprioception. All these things are going on, all the senses. That happens with speech. And McLuhan says that's tactile because Wilford is looking to define, to say a cliche is an act of a unit of consciousness. He's looking to be definite, find a finish point. And he doesn't get that McLuhan is going to say, even McLuhan might intend it to be words that he thinks Wilford are contradictory to his, but he wants that McLuhan is showing how in the act of conversation, you're going to have two parallel worlds going on, and that's not a problem unless you're trying to define, get to a particular point. And so he's purposely saying different things, but it's supporting what Wilford's saying. So it's like you're saying they talk past each other because they come at the same point from different words. It seems to me McLuhan is more aware of the tactile interface of language than Wilford is, at least in these dialogues. And he's missing the point that when McLuhan says the cliches of language for James Joyce make up a vast hydroelectric system, he doesn't know that that Marshall agrees that this hydroelectric system is an act of consciousness, an act of awareness. And so the difference between the two keeps things going. It's the difference that makes the difference. Wilford doesn't get that. He's trying to match. Yet he accuses McLuhan of being stuck with some old definitions. I just found it very interesting to look at that dialogue the way I did it. I didn't see that McLuhan was disagreeing with him. He just said, hey, Wilford, if you don't include my words, then you don't really know what you mean, how cliche is an act of consciousness. An act of consciousness, in a way, goes in four directions: forward, retrieval, obsolescence, and flip. It's McLuhan's including that, and he's calling it a storage system. And Wilford says it's a probe, like going forward. It's not a storage. Well, that's included in McLuhan's understanding of an act of consciousness.
Yes, and insofar as consciousness is a collective, or at least in the sense a dialogical making, McLuhan's always keeps open, and so in a sense he's opening or trying to open Wilfred Watson, whereas his possible predisposition is to close down, to define, to isolate.
That's Wilfred's tendency or McLuhan's?
I would say it's Watson's tendency here.
Yeah, even though Watson, I think he sees himself as the one exploring multi-consciousness, and he doesn't see McLuhan wanting to do that. He presents McLuhan as shut down.
Yeah, well, Watson acknowledges in the article essentially that he did adopt, or he does consciously adopt, one pole for the purposes of creating and sustaining that dialogue. So in a certain sense, he's taking a position opposite to and counter to McLuhan. So if McLuhan's opening up, then he is he's got to go on the other side to play his part in the dynamic.
Yeah, he thinks he has to go to the other side. He doesn't know that no matter what he says, it'll be the other side. It's just like in our own conversation here, I'll say one thing, you'll say something maybe close, but you'll say it'll mean other meanings. That's natural that people disagree in a conversation. Disagreement is not an issue, but it is an issue if someone's trying to make a point. It's the process of not being able to stop the natural disagreement or the shifting from one perspective to the other. That awareness is what McLuhan's talking about as an act of consciousness. Okay, so later, Wilford talks about, he disagrees with McLuhan saying that media technology are extensions of the senses. He tries to say claim, he's saying something different. And what if he is saying something different, the meaning he's stressing is what McLuhan means too. Did you notice that? That his quibbling over McLuhan's definition of media as extensions of our senses, he's trying to say, no, no, there's something else. Did you notice that?
Yeah, but there's services in that. Like, in a certain sense, it is this his way to stay afloat in the drama of, I think what you've called elsewhere, the drama of blocking and merging. I mean, it's yeah. pretty boring dialogue if it goes, McLuhan starts off, the cliche is a storage system, a storage battery, and Wilfred Watson replies, yes. You know, it goes nowhere. So yes, Marshall, you are the great mind. So, you know, here you've got two, you know, incredibly charismatic and forceful and erudite personality. How do you not be subsumed by that? How do you preserve a space for yourself, a space to say things? So, you know, if this was to take place at all and he was not to be totally sunk, then he has to do that. He's forced into that role.
Yes, but he says that he actually thinks he has to do it, or he points out that he is doing it. He doesn't know it's natural that he does that.
Possibly.
Yeah. He talks about disagreement. I mean, well, okay, we understand you're just disagreeing to keep the dialogue interesting. Don't make it like it's a big issue. Or a point of contention with McLuhan. That's what I'm saying. You know, I'm saying to Wilfred, you're making an issue out of something that is doesn't need to be stated.
Yeah, possibly, but like the fruits or the services of his disagreement is he does bring out or provides an alibi for McLuhan to bring out more texture and color and detail in what he actually has to say.
Right. Okay, so I'm trying to find that. Do you remember that part where he says, Marshall believes in that they're extensions of our senses, technologies are, but he tries to say something differently. He tries to say that Marshall's missing the multi-consciousness aspect of the global theater. And in cliched archetype, multi-consciousness is in a sentence. You know, the new man, the literary archetypalists don't have an understanding of the multi-consciousness we're in now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We didn't know whether McLuhan...
Page 152.
We didn't.
Cliché to archetype.
Oh, you want to read that little bit?
Yeah, it's a section that goes from page 152 to page 156. It's talking about... And this will be a good point to discuss insofar as it's a way for us to address the nano that we were talking about last session. It says, in contrast to private awareness, social consciousness is a process of scrapping, retrieving, and probing. The emphasis, for the most part, is upon retrieval and the accumulation of vast residues. With the development in the 19th century of many new technologies, clichés, the supremacy of unified print consciousness gave way to multi-consciousness. There was no garbage heap, no midden heap. There was no unconscious large enough to hold all of the materials generated by the breakdown of so much probing and environing. And then it goes on, says these numerous other works testify to the impact of the new multi-consciousness. And he cites Jerry's Uber Roy, Eliot's The Wasteland, Wyndham Lewis, Apes of God, Finnegan's Wake, and the entire literature of the theatre of the surf. Of the absurd.
Yeah, what you just read is the issue, the main issue in this Plaza Marie dialogue. And so when I read that, you know, back in 40 years ago, I don't know if I wondered who wrote it, but over time I tend to think McLuhan wrote it. But I see from this dialogue that very section, because he was a playwright involved in theater, so he would have theater absurd in his mind. That very section you read is Wilfred's axe to grind. And it turns out that he didn't think McLuhan agreed with that or understood it. even though it's in a book that's presented to be written by McLuhan and Watson, therefore McLuhan's involved, he must have accepted it. We think it is a statement by McLuhan, but it is actually Wilford. According to this article, it's Wilford's contention that McLuhan doesn't appreciate. So it's almost like the one section of Wilford was allowed to stick in. You know what I mean? He got to ask McLuhan.
Yeah, possibly.
But we wouldn't. McLuhan probably didn't see it as a problem the way Wilford thought McLuhan was failing on understanding this. Now, the multi-consciousness thing, I certainly think McLuhan understood that. So I'm trying to figure out, aside from just trying to make an interesting dialogue, you know, Watson's just trying to do that. And then I figure out why, it's Hendiades, isn't it? Watson is Hendiades. He's saying the same thing McLuhan's saying, but claiming he has to add his part, and it's actually different from McLuhan. That's Hendiades. You know, one by means of two.
Although I think in this article that we're looking at, I think at least what he thinks is his point of difference is brought out towards right at the end, where he's talking about whether our extensions are actually a multiplication of the sensorium as opposed to an extension of an existing body. I think that's where he. Well, at least my interpretation of where he locates his difference with McLuhan.
Right, and that's good. You found the sentence that I was looking for. And I think what he thinks he's saying, what Wilford thinks he's saying, is exactly what McLuhan's always saying. And you can hear it in Eric's talk that we just heard today. The recent panel, he says that our human natures are changed, our crowd dynamics are changed.
Yeah.
The human body has changed. That's an essential McLuhan point. So I really enjoyed this replay of those dialogues by Wilford. I think it's a very good article. It makes some very important things and even gives me a boost. We'll get that in a minute. But his discussion of the unconscious and the technological cliché, it's like the essence of the point that's being made in the cliched archetype is spelled out in this article. Excellent intro to the book. But what's peculiar is that he thinks that he's got a bug to pick about being despondent about something McLuhan didn't mean. Now, okay, the Catholic part of McLuhan that said media don't affect the citadel of consciousness, maybe that aspect is what Wilford knows all too well. Having been, a close friend of McLuhan and saw the Catholic part, he thinks from that view that McLuhan's some kind of conservative, preserving the body image. Well, certainly McLuhan's writings, McLuhan doesn't mean that. McLuhan is in the avant-garde of talking about the changing body image. So it's a curious, I don't know if you want to stay on this point, it's very curious about how Wilford is not explaining the difference, the distinction he's pointing out very well. He's not giving enough evidence of what McLuhan is missing in terms of what Wilford is trying to say about multiplication of the senses. I mean, Barry Nevitt used to have 14 senses. And, Barry repeated McLuhan up the yin-yang. So if Barry could say it, and I don't know if it's in Take Today or in one of Barry's books, but I'm sure McLuhan would agree with that. And I bet you we could find a quote somewhere. We have many senses, way more, countless senses. Even though McLuhan countered that with the four-sense modality. He said we had four senses. You know about that, right?
Yes. What does he say? It was a Lucianic sensorium. It's, he seems to jump between five senses and four senses, and then medieval saints idea of 10 senses, 10 out at dinner. He's doesn't seem to affix on any one anthropology in some ways. But
but that's the he is miming the tactile function of language. He's actually representing. You remember in the footnote, the little note that I found in the archives when I was organizing it for Mrs. McLuhan, he had a little note introducing understanding media for the manuscript. And he said, this archetypalizes speech. If you take speech as tactile, McLuhan always was showing the tactile interplay that speech represented. So that's why he jumps from four to 4 to 5 or 5 to 14. He has to go from unit awareness becomes a storage battery. He has to jump around. And so, you know, people say, well, he contradicted himself all over the place. No, he's not contradicting. He's demonstrating the tactile interplay. And if you see that's what he's doing, that to me right now seems to be the important part of McLuhan. He's showing, you know, Madonna says, I contradict myself. So what? McLuhan says, no, I don't contradict myself. I'm showing the tactile interplay of multi-consciousness. It's not just me talking. I'm including what the person who I'm talking to would say back.
Yep, I agree. Sorry, you just blipped out there, Bob. We just might have a bit of a technological issue. Are you still there or here? Okay,
so when I did the archives for McLuhan's archives for with Mrs. McLuhan and Mady Molinaro, I found a manuscript for Understanding Media, and there was a note attached to it. It was about a page long. And what really stood out, he said, this on the fact or uses the situation that speech is now an archetype or regards speech as archetypal. If speech is tactile, then he mimed the jumping about, the four positions, the interplay, the dialectic, and the fluid back and forth, or the abrupt back and forth, the connect and then the disconnect. He demonstrated that in what he talked about as you saying what were you just illustrating? He jumped a boat. What was the context for that? Four and five senses.
Yeah, between this his articulation of the sensorium.
Yeah, so sometimes he'd say four, sometimes five, sometimes this, sometimes that. He had to take two positions. He didn't believe in four as a limited final statement. He said four to bounce off of five and five to bounce off of four. That bouncing off, or what you'd say, jumping around, is the miming of tactility. So when he says speech is an archetype in the Understanding Media, the action of speech, the tactile action of speech, is what he mimes in Understanding Media. And that's why he says when you're dealing with the TV environment, you've got to grab anything that's available. So he showed the cubist kind of approach he had of looking at this situation from many angles, but not looking at it, being on both sides or jumping from side to side. Let's look at that as tactility. That is what Wilford is missing, the tactile function of language. And I don't even know if I could have said this before. I'm saying it now having read this article. Might have thought it before or something, but I'm just seeing clearly today that it's miming the act of speech. And so when he's accused of contradicting himself, that's not the case. Madonna says, I contradict myself, makes it a defensive statement, or what is it, stubbornly celebrating the fact she contradicts herself and says, so what? McLuhan wasn't contradicting himself. He was leaving his body and going into the other body position of the person he's talking to, and then maybe a third body, and then a fourth body, then back to his body, jumping around, showing the envelope of speech. That is definitely something, and that would be quadrophenia, one person acting on quadrophenia. That is definitely something nobody's ever pointed out that he was doing.
Yeah, or it's in a sense contra. Diction, but without normally people seem to fixate on that as being a problem of logic, whereas if you're dealing in analogic and rhetoric and tactility, then contradiction takes on a whole different meaning, and it's not necessarily a disservice or problematic.
Yeah, I noticed in this recent audio of Eric McLuhan being at this panel at some Christian culture place in Christian University College in Wheaton, I think, Wheaton, Illinois. He talked about, he emphasized more than I've heard McLuhan emphasize, the fact that you're everywhere on the telephone. McLuhan would say it, but Eric kept developing it. But, you know, if you wanted to really show with your physical chemical body what it means to be on the telephone, you would have to show that you're here in Hawaii, then you're in New Zealand, then you're in Japan, and then you're in Alaska, and you'd have to jump around. He was trying to show that he had more than one body by what his speech did. there wasn't one body saying contradictory things. He was becoming different bodies. Now that's now we get back to conscious mediumship. He was channeling the environmental fact that you're in many places at once. If you try to demonstrate how you're in several places at once on the telephone, how would you do that? How could you? It's a non-visual situation. And Eric says you have no body. Well, another way of saying it is your body is bouncing back and forth between Japan, New Zealand, and Hawaii. Like, just think of that. When he gave his speech, he was shifting positions. He was actually appearing, you could almost say, as different characters around the stage, a different position on stage. Now, Eric says in his talk, he mentions radio and TV and computer are like dialects, different aspect of the electric sensorium. So then McLuhan wrote his play in the 50s where we had media be characters speaking their life, interacting on stage. Well, you can mime that with your physical body. So I'll just say one more thing, then you can speak. Watson, being a theatrical person, working with theater is a visual space medium. He was remained within the psyche of the theater and trying to get an overview to move the characters around. He didn't become the different characters in different positions on the stage. That's what McLuhan's doing. McLuhan used someone else. Okay, he uses Wilfred to say a bunch of lines, and Wilfred thinks that McLuhan is McLuhan's responding. You could take every one of that McLuhan's responses in the Stichomythia. Let's take each one as a different McLuhan. So it's like there were five or eight McLuhans talking to Wilfred, and Wilfred thought he was talking to one McLuhan. But McLuhan was being different people by different responses hopping around the page, around the stage. Okay, I guess I've made a point there. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, in that sense, Watson possibly and Eric McLuhan share a similar situation insofar as McLuhan, I guess, in his writing and his presentation, he keeps it open. He presents a situation that you enter into and have to dance around and reassemble for yourself, whereas Eric was talking from the position of a definite and definitive and concrete understanding of supposedly what it is to be human. And in that same sense, Wilfred here, he's the director. He's the person that stands back from the stage and looks at all these players and has that single point of view. Whereas, I guess, McLuhan is amongst the fray, a player amongst a multi-conscious, a multiplayer amongst the play.
Yeah, so Wilfred complains that the dialogues, when they got going, weren't transcribed enough. And then when they get into transcription, with Mrs. Stewart being the secretary taking it down, McLuhan dominated and the dialogue suffered. So they're going back between great dialogue but no transcription made, not getting the book done. But when they got into the writing thing and to make the book happen, McLuhan dominated. It was from the director, Wilfred Watson's point of view, that McLuhan was an actor in the play, but the actor, because he complained McLuhan ended up dictating too much, the actor was telling the director what to do. And the director, Watson, found that odd.
Yep.
That the actor was telling the director what to do. Maybe you could say something about this more, or we've that one.
It's in terms of I guess transiting through, the reason why I was quite struck by this article is in terms of its I find a lot of services in what Watson has to say. I quite like how it provides a different language for trying to talk about what McLuhan was talking about. And there's some aspects of how Watson talks that sort of resonate with me. And particularly where he's talking about the magical body of modern man and how we have a number of different magical bodies. And it introduces this idea that there's a multiplicity of like different magical animals, magical different species. And in a certain sense, that's like the aesthetic of now. Like, we're hoiking that up at the level of popular entertainment as our art form now, people being different magical animals. And so there's a certain contemporaneous in what he's gesturing at.
Okay. Before we get into the magic body, this article is a great article because he's emphasizing the technological unconscious that, you know, shows the Freudian, Jungian, and some other person he names as anemic forms of unconscious, you know, not useful, especially today. And that is a key point to understand, which McLuhan points out in Counterblast and then in Cliché Archetype, to understand that it's a technical unconscious. And nobody spells it out. I have. I even have a reference to it in my home book. Nobody spells it out, and this is the first article ever in dealing with McLuhan stuff that points that out and makes it a major point. That's very valuable what Watson does. And I wouldn't say you like the language he's using, but he's not pointing out something that McLuhan didn't know. It's just that McLuhan never got around to develop that, and Watson's developing that part that McLuhan meant.
Yeah, so
you see what I'm saying?
So it's, yeah, no, I fully agree. But it's I find a lot of value in seeing other people as they grapple with McLuhan and how they come to grips with what he's trying to say. And it's exactly in his grappling and his groping that it gives me fresh insight into some of those things that that were not immediately apparent to me.
Right. No, it's really, it's like I used to enjoy McLuhan's Hot and Cool and McLuhan, the other one, McLuhan Pro and Con. It was more fun reading people's attempt to translate McLuhan than reading McLuhan. But McLuhan was fun and once you got it. But I agree. I love to read other people's attempts to talk about McLuhan. Probably because no one ever talked about McLuhan. So you look for something and those books were useful. And this is another example in that genre. And it's done by a very perceptive person in relation to McLuhan's work. He says stuff that no one else has said, and if you hadn't noticed in McLuhan, it would be new to you. But it is in McLuhan, and the multi-consciousness is in McLuhan. And so I'm going to call, Wilford Biddy the Hen, you know, the hen in Finnegan's Wake that finds the letter, because he's the Hendiades. He's the, you know, one McLuhan by two. And if you can't, yeah. He's a different McLuhan. He's the hen. Okay. Now, this second point. Oh, yeah, I want to say in his earlier parts of the article where he discusses the unconscious, he raises a really good question. I wonder if I could find it. Right at the beginning, a basic question about the implications of McLuhan stuff, whether there is consciousness separate from the technical unconscious, which is kind of external. Like, is there any private consciousness, any citadel of consciousness, is the question he raises early in the article, if you remember.
Yes.
Which is really, really a good point, because I think that's what McLuhan was exploring. He seemed to be emphasizing that there was no private citadel of consciousness, as he talked about everybody being a zombie of the latest environments, but once in a while he'd stick it in. Media do not affect the citadel of consciousness. So sticking that in showed that was part of, he was jumping into that position too. Okay, when you come to the magic body, it's incredible that he's even using the term magic body, because that really supports my five-bodied concept or percept. And you can't say it comes out of that. You know, Bob, you come up with this body, but what's that got to do with McLuhan? Well, if we didn't have Ted Wilford Watson, you could say it has nothing but with McLuhan. But Wilford shows the transformation, the transition, the bridge to my five body. So what's interesting is all technologies are a magical body, but the wild body, what the heck is that? And I remember you saying to me a year or two ago when you first sort of thought about this, hey, Bob, this wild body is like your anthropomorphic physical or the mystery landscape, right?
Yes.
That's really appropriate about this. He actually includes what I work, and I worked out my stuff unaware of this article.
Yeah, and that's, so this is the services of the article. It's a it's a logical midstep. It's a nice way of I think it's a nice bridge to, I think, what Don Thiel says, you know, beyond and beside McLuhan. And for me, it serves this role. It's so it's a nice, it's great that we're talking about it right here.
Yeah, it's Para McLuhan. But the, I don't know how much to go into the five bodies, just to say that the massive media environments get shrunk by the digital envelope so that technology is smaller than us. Therefore, it appears our chemical body is retrieved and not inside massive environments. Now, it's not true it's totally retrieved, but that tendency that it is retrieved, and you get the jack, what do they call the jackass sports, the extreme sports.
Yes.
You know, the bouncing around of the body, but, you know, bouncing the body. Now, Eric, in his talk that we just heard on the tape, he talks about the body being a programmable art forms. True, but that would be when there's, when the analog media environments are bigger than the body. But when the body becomes bigger than the media environments, which happens during this digital Android meme phase, then the body swallows the technologies. The media become programmable art forms from some position, which increasingly is the mystery landscape position, or what he calls the wild body. That's it. We've come back full circle, and now we're back at the beginning point with the wild body, which the caveman didn't even know what dimensions it had. So that was always lingering there. And now it is upon us, because the technology has become so tiny that they don't seem to be a factor anymore. We're confronting the wild body.
Okay.
And that may be why they hear. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so this gets us right into talking back into the themes that we've raised in the previous two. What then is the hypnosis, or is there hypnosis, where, under the situation where the body is bigger and has supposedly swallowed now programmable media environments? That would seem to me to be talking to where we're at now.
Right. McLuhan said in the 60s that there were so many in technological environments that were developed in the 20th century and then juggled by the average human. And this is from the perspective that the human is inside these massive analog media environments. But the fact that the person juggles it, he can't get stuck in any of the biases. So McLuhan said the collective effect of all these media environments in the global theater led to a new level of awareness, a kind of technique of suspended judgment, where the person isn't able to get into having a bias anymore.
Yes.
Is floating free of it. And finds that a lot of anxiety about that situation, because most people might want a bias. They can't. McLuhan used to say people are trying to jump into the other guy's skin. They were trying to find something to fit inside of. And it would be conceptually in the 60s about, okay, what culture, what bias do I have? And literate people would think of it as a point of view. And they couldn't be loyal. So McLuhan, loyal to any bias. And so that's where McLuhan's saying in the 60s, the larger analog media environments were dehypnotizing the person. Dehypnotizing because the person couldn't stay long in the trance of any one particular environment. It would shift to another environment, so he wasn't hypnotized by it, like slower cultures were before. So you have, in relation to the bigger environments than the little body, the little chemical physical body, the hypnosis is not being able to take.
Yes.
But now, when the digital shrinks the environments and the body is bigger, now the human programs the media environment, and that means he programs the hypnosis. Now the person tries to hypnotize other people with his manipulation of the media imagery.
Yeah, which
is the battle of the hypnotist. Where,
I guess, the whole theme of that recent film called Inception.
Yeah, have you seen that?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't, but I heard enough about it. That's really appropriate, yes, because it's about going inside each other's dreaming hypnosis factor and getting a control fulcrum point and allowing people to be hypnotized, but most people knew they were being hypnotized and fought with it or played with it. I don't want to go too much in that film, but yeah, that film sounds like a mirror of what I'm talking about. The symptom today is that we don't get programmed. There was this period in the '60s where humans were left nowhere because they couldn't get hypnotized anymore, but they didn't have the means to counter hypnotize. The Android meme or digital media now gives people the opportunity to play the game of hypnotizing people. You remember he said in the medium is a massage, art is anything you can get away with?
Yes.
Well, that applied to, you know, the gallery world. But now all the major historical media dialects, radio, TV, music, satellite, computer, all these former big environments are what you play with to see what you get away with. And you remember McLuhan said that, you might have been quoting Lewis, the job of the artist is to get attention. Well, now I guess everybody's trying to get attention right now. They're all in that traditional artistic position by default because the technology allows them to be the master hypnotist. And everybody's fighting to be the one that gets noticed to be successfully hypnotizing people.